next speaker, Xavier Joubier, is an IT manager and engineer for a multinational French company outside of Paris. He's one of the new rising stars in amateur eclipse chasing, and he's going to dazzle us with some amazing web capabilities of mapping both on and off the web with his co-author who couldn't make it, John Tilley. Thank you.
So let's have a quick look at some recent mapping tools that you can use in order to plan your eclipse tracks, and also
the pitfalls that you can have with those tools. So you know some limitations also.
Okay. So
during the last 3 years, many new tools have come up. Tools like Google Earth, Google Maps. You also have Yahoo Maps or Microsoft Virtual Earth and so on. You have Whirlwind from NASA. But the nice thing is some of the tools, you have an API. So you can also, add some plugins and, modify the tool for your own use. So we will focus mostly on Google Earth and Google Maps, okay, because these are the free tools available on any platform, so anyone can have access to those tools. One good thing also with the two tools is that you can overlay some data on it. So, for example, an eclipse path, some images, whatever. And you can also know exactly, the coordinates of any click on the Earth, and compute the local circumstances of the eclipse, and do many other things. You also have, tools, the old tools, maps, geographic, information systems. Most of them were very expensive a few years ago. Now we have some new free tools also you can use, and with the same data that is available for Google Earth or Google Maps. Okay? So you can download everything and make your own. So as I said, we will focus mostly on, I would say, the web-enabled tools on Google Earth and Google Maps. Okay, so one of the reasons why you want to have good maps is to plan your eclipse trips, and of course select your viewing site. So some key considerations that you must take into account is to have, of course, accurate coordinates of the path, have good quality maps. And know exactly what the weather is going to be like along the track. So it's a good way to, in fact, overlay cloud maps onto those maps with, of course, the track. You also, can use it, for interest, trying to find, which eclipses did occur over any location on Earth, to know, for example, how many eclipses you can have in Australia during a short period of 10 years. Study also, the Saros, some historical studies also. So you can, for example, check eclipses in the past and check that it's correct, that this world, you can also determine the value of the delta T and see how far you're from it. So you can do a lot of things. About delta T, one thing that you, of course, always have to take into consideration is that 1 second difference is about 464 meters at the equator. So on the center line, it's no big deal. I mean, even if you are, half a kilometer away from the center line, okay, you will lose at most 1 second, depending on the eclipse. But anyway, it's no big deal. So you have to know that. Of course, it's nice to be on the center line if you want to maximize the duration. But
if you want to observe from the edge, it's important.
Yes, on the edge, yes, and we will see that after. One thing also that you have to take into account is the ephemeris that is used, because some are less precise than others. Okay, so that you have to take into account. Also, one thing that is pretty important for some eclipses is the refraction and the topography also around the viewing site. A good example was, in fact, Antarctica in 2003. We will see it a bit later. One thing also that you can take into account is the lunar limb profile, also in the grazing zones. This is really important to be aware of. Also, you can have problems, you know, with eclipse types, but that again, it's doesn't occur very often. 1986 was a good example. Glenn could probably talk about it. Okay, so on this slide, with the influence of delta T. In the 50 years down, 1996, the delta T, the estimated value for delta T was 71.7 seconds. Okay. The red line. And now the new value is 65.3. Probably next year it will be 65.8.7. Anyway, you can see the difference between the two lines. So it's not huge, but there is one, so you have to take it. So of course, you know, it's important to know it, you know, for grazing zones. Of course, you know, the future values, you know, will change over time. Then you have the ephemeris. So depending on the ephemeris that you use, you can also, you know, have the span between the different center lines. So, you know, I try with some of the most used ones. For example, the D200, the one that is used in fact in the Fredespanak publication. Then, for example, you have the right one, that is numerical integration. And the blue track that is using, in fact, the 5 million planar solar eclipse database, okay, the new one. So you see, it doesn't make a huge difference, but there is one. Then you have a big pitfall that you have with those maps. One thing that you have to take into account is the number of points that you are using to plot lines. If you have an increment step size that is too big, since you are drawing lines between points, you are doing an approximation, in fact, of the curve on the Earth. And you can have a difference by as much as 300 meters between the line, the plotted line, and the real line. And you can see it if you in fact increase the accuracy, the line is moving. So we'll see it again later. So the same for grazing zones, it's not good enough. You have to be very careful on the center line. Problem, but in the grazing zones, you have to be really careful. So if anyone is using those maps, you have to plot them at the highest accuracy from the grazing zone. Okay, so here is for Antarctica. The problem was the sun was close to the midnight sun, so it was very low on the horizon. And since Antarctica is rising from sea level to over 3,000 meters at the center, we also had to take into account the topography of the continent, plus, of course, the refraction. So for such an eclipse, I mean, it's really important to be able to deal with those problems.
We can't hear you.
Okay, so here is a map of next year's eclipse. So you have Jess Anderson cloud cover data overlaid plus the Eclipse track. Okay, so you can even add cloud animation, anything you want. On Google Earth, you can add as many layers, hide them, show them, do whatever you want. Different map projections. So I will move on and read it in the proceedings. Take into account also the datum. Have some errors. Okay, the 1925 eclipse over New York was a nice one, to be able to, in fact, check exactly where the southern limit did occur. There were people, in the streets that did look at it, just to be sure, where, in fact, the southern line, the southern limit did pass over Manhattan. So you see the two different maps. The one above is in Google Earth, and the one below is using Frontier's mapping tool. On the old Halley's map of the 1724 eclipse, the last one that in fact also went over Los Angeles. The next one being in, I think, 200 euros. The same one in Google Maps. And you can see that in fact Ella's map was pretty accurate. It's pretty close to what we have now. Paper maps, different references. Yes. Also, with the tool, you can, of course, plot maps, but also create GPS files that you can then upload on your GPS and use it to find the viewing site. But you also have to be careful because the maps given with a GPS, the default maps, they are low-res maps, low quality. And for example, last year in Libya, Tripoli was at sea. So, you have to be really careful. I mean, the maps are most of the time correct, close to big cities and in Western countries. But once you go far away from those areas, be careful. Chess understand maps, geographic information software. And the same, in fact, type of software, but for free. ArcGIS, for example, is expensive. Some other tools that are available. Google Earth. The nice thing about Google Earth is that, in fact, you can easily overlay data, and it's user configurable, and modify on the fly. In fact, everything, something that is not that easy to do with Google Maps. You have to do a lot more, programming behind to have something that a user can use with Google Earth. I mean, once you have the data, you can always hide a part of it, show it, move it, whatever. Again, one thing also that you have to take into account with Google Earth. You can have some image coast mismatch. So you have, in fact, two types of errors. The coastline is off, plus also the image overlay is also not at the right position. So you have to be careful also, in some areas it's not totally correct. So, if you wanted to, take a ship, be careful. Google Earth is using eMap 0 data. It's freely available on the web. You have to download. It's about 100 megabytes of data. But if you want to plot maps with some of the tools, you can easily do. Also, something that is that did change in Google Earth. It's all, in fact, the height data. Before it was really low resolution, it was around, I think, up to 300 meters resolution, and there were a lot of holes. You can see, you know, on the image, first one, that you had, you know, big holes. It was not accurate at all. Now with the new Google Earth version, you have about 90 meter accuracy on all the Earth, but I would say the polar range. Anyway, it's much better than before, and even, you know, mountains, you can see them and check, for example, that the sun is not occulted by a mountain. Okay, so one of the pitfalls with those maps is when you want to know the local circumstances, you can, you know, click on the map, it will compute circumstances, and you see that this map, I did try, you know, to do it at the limit. So it's quite right, but on the next one, you see a difference. And this gap, only because the plotting was done at low resolution, so less points. So since you draw a straight line between the points, in the middle of two points, you have a huge gap between, in fact, the real limit and the one that you see on the map. So be really careful about this. One solution to solve this is, in fact, not to draw straight lines, but to draw splines, for example, or to draw what we call great circle lines, geodesic lines. But of course, it's more processing that you have to do behind. But most of the time, the easy way to go is to plot more points. Increase, in fact, the resolution of the computations. Anyway, I mean, the location of the click is always accurate. So you can trust this data. Then you have the same thing in Google Earth, but there is a small difference. Google Earth does use some kind of splines to draw the lines on the Earth. But there is a bug. On, in fact, the umbra, you can see the umbra is south of the limit. This is simply a bug which should be corrected in a newer version. Of course, the bug does not exist, see it a bit, but it's less obvious if you increase the resolution. Then, the tool to, you know, plot all the eclipses in the 5 millennium canon. So you can, you know, select any eclipses. You can even select multiple eclipses. So, you know, generate either a map, Google Earth file, or GPS file. And you have also, you know, all the Bessel elements data. Everything is available. The same tool is also available for lunar eclipses. You can query also, you know, by location, so find eclipses that did occur at any location on Earth. Another use also of Google Earth is to overlay satellite imagery. For example, this was last year in Libya at our eclipse camp. I had an image taken from a satellite just 18 minutes before totality. So you see the camp in all of the desert. But you can have static data, and you can also have animation. So for next year, it's the month of June, not August. Let's give you an idea. But this can be easily done, as long as you have, in fact, the data. then it can also, you know, help you to scout all the area around the viewing site. But this is for next year in China. So this is in Google Earth, and this is from the ground. But you can see the mountains, you know, behind. You can also have multiple eclipses shown at once. Or in Google Maps also. So the same tool is available also for the night clip. So for example, the one on Tuesday morning in Google Maps, and so as Fred told you yesterday, now the same tool is available also from NASA website. Not all the features are available, but it's the same code base, in fact. Okay, this is John Thierry's tool that should be available by the end of the year. Just, you know, because we don't have the time. Okay, so then, what's next? Many new things are going to come, I would say, in the next 2 years. You have new nice phones onto which you will be able to display iris, those maps, with integrated GPS, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's going to be really, really nice. And I'm even working now on new tools, you know, to in fact visualize the eclipse in Google Earth with also cloud cover animation and everything. So it's a long project, but I'm working on it with Google, and should be available in about a year. Probably after, you know, next year's eclipse, but for 2009 should be available. And I have now questions.
Yes, questions?
Yeah, Peter, I'm not really familiar with the client server services that are available from an API, Google Earth, or Google Maps. But you have access to the actual terrain data, PCP, perception standards?
You can, but yes, you can. It's not easy, but you can. In Google Earth, it's very easy. With Google Maps, it's a hack. Google Maps, in fact, on my maps, you have a corner, you have some tool, and there's one at the tool. If you click on it, whatever you move the mouse, it's going to show the
attitude.
Okay, it does exist. It's already available, but those parameters are hidden. I will, in fact, release when the complete tool is ready, how to use it. You can also, you know, change the value of delta T, you can change many parameters, and plus, in fact, a different map. You can even, you know, ask back to show, for example, the limits on the center line, or the center, whatever.
We saw Point Venus in Tahiti, and you just showed the 95th Street in New York in Manhattan. I went there recently, and there is no monument, and there is no plaque. So if some of you want to talk to me about getting a plaque from there, why don't we, some of us, try to coordinate
I live
put a marker up there. Let's work on that.
That would be interesting.
Yes.
I want to point out that IOTA, we're doing similar work for the asteroid occultations and a little less on the lunar grazing occultations. The asteroid occultations are kind of easier because the error bars are kind of large, and so we don't have to be quite as precise. But for the lunar grazes, it's the same problem as the edges. And one of the things that's more difficult, I mean, we have a software that calculates the path of the grazing occultation, but it changes with height above sea level. So if you're at a high elevation, then you have to take that into account. And we can do that just by calculating the depth of different heights above sea level and then plotting the path with that calculation. But also with the lunar profile, the range where you actually want to observe relative to the predicted northern or southern limit changes, so it's not an easy problem at all. So we're a lot more primitive for the grazes. We do have some Google Earth things to plot the basic things, but then we have to apply some of our own corrections. And then we can plot offset lines to define the regions that we need to, but you sort of have to figure some of the stuff out yourself to get help to do that. The important thing for the eclipse limits is you also have to worry about these things too, the height above sea level.
And right now, the thing you have to know is that behind there is 150,000 lines of code. So it's a lot. And it won't go down.